To understand Imam Hussain alayhi salam, his movement, his mission, his qiyam and the objectives of his qiyam, is necessary to analyze the situation and circumstances that he faced and what was different in his time than in the time of the other Imams. Because we don't see any other Imam who stood up and they came out with their family and children, put them in harm's way like Imam Hussain had done. So obviously the circumstances were different, and we are trying to see what was it different in the time of Imam Hussain. And as we discuss this, obviously our lessons for us of how we can help ourselves and give us the chance to make sure that we do not fall into the trap of Muawiyah and Yazid, and stand with the truth and be under the flag of Imam Hussain. These are things that we want to learn through this analysis. When we look at the time of Imam Hussain, 61 years after Hijrat, the Prophet died in 11th year of Hijrat. From the death of the Prophet until Ashura was 50 years. When we look at this 50 years, half a century, it is two generations. In two generations, or in 50 years, the society had gone from being a society that the Prophet had left to a society that butchered his grandson. A 50-year decline of the society that led to what we now know as Ashura. And when we look at these, exactly in between 25 years, you see, one generation in between, was the period of the Khilafat of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And in this time, in order for us to understand the society in the time of Imam Hussain, first, we must take a look at the society in the time of Imam Ali. And I just want to go through some of the things that Imam Ali himself had said in describing the situation of his time. What was the society in his time? How was it? No other person can describe it better than Amirul Mu'mineen. And we see this in Nahjul Balagha, in a khutbah, for those who want to research it, number 32. In it, he describes his own society, the people he is living amongst. And from there we can get a picture, an image of what was it, what was this decline, a picture of this decline at a midway point from the death of the Prophet until Ashura. So let me just read a few lines from the khutbah so that we can understand it in Mawla's words himself. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. Amir al-Mu'mineen says, أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ إِنَّا قَدْ أَصْبَحْنَا فِي دَهْرٍ أَنُودٍ وَزَمَنٍ كَنُودٍ يَئِدُّ فِيهِ الْمُحْسِنُ مُصِيئًا وَيَزْدَادُ الظَّالِمُ فِيهِ أَطُوَّا لَا نَنْتَفِعُ بِمَا عَلِمْنَا وَلَا نَسْأَلُ عَمَّا جَهِلْنَا وَلَا نَتَخَوَّفُ قَارِئَةً حَتَّى تَحِلُّ بِنَا. In describing the times, he has said that, O people, we find ourselves in times that are stubborn, resistive, hard-headed, headstrong. Times where people are headstrong and hard-headed against what is good for them, the truth. They are stubborn in accepting it. They don't want to accept it. And a time where people are ungrateful for what they have been given and what they have in front of them. This is a society that has two things, a time that has two things, a society that has two qualities. One is that they are stubborn. They don't want to change for the better. They're happy with what they are. They don't want to set up challenges for themselves so that they can improve. And two, they're ungrateful for what they have. They want more. They're ungrateful for what they have been given. These are two qualities of the society. And because of these qualities, now Imam says, what is the outcome of that? He says the expression or the symptoms of this society is what? يَعِدُّ فِيهِ الْمُحْسِنْ مُسِيْئًا. He says that a good person, someone who does good, someone who stands for truth, someone who is a good doer, is regarded as someone who is sinful. He's regarded as someone who is disobedient, sinful. Now what is this time? This is the time of Ali. He's saying that in my time, a person who does good is regarded as someone who is sinful. For example, if I speak out against the zalim, which in Islam is a good thing. So now when I do that good, I am regarded as a sinner. And people look at me and look down on me. Why is this happening? He said, this is my time I'm living in. You see, people who are good, they're not regarded as good. They are regarded as sinners. Now if you look at this in comparison to what Rasulullah had left. In his time, a good person was regarded as good. A good person was regarded as good. A person like Abu Dharr and Salman were regarded as good. They were honored. They were respected. At least outwardly. Inwardly, you might still have those people who bear racist and tribalistic thoughts. But at least outwardly, it was a society that when you see someone doing good, it is respected. They're honored. And really, when you look at that society, you will see that if you look at the society before the Prophet, Abu Dharr was alive in the times of Jahiliyyah. Salman was alive in the times of Jahiliyyah. And I want you to see, these people did not change when the Prophet came. Their character was the same. They were still jewels. They were still diamonds. But what happens is that in the time of Jahiliyyah, people could not recognize gems when they see them. What the Prophet did is that he changed the lenses of the society. So now the society had sight. They had vision that they could see jewels and recognize jewels. Abu Dharr was good before, but his goodness was known in the society that the Prophet had left. Salman was good before, but his goodness was known in the society that the Prophet had left. But now when the Prophet left, you see the same person, Abu Dharr, what happened to him? Same person about whom the Prophet had said, the sun does not shine on anyone who is more truthful than Abu Zar. The same person who the Prophet left, what happened to him? He was exiled. He died in solitude, in the middle of nowhere. My friends, Abu Dhar was left in this situation. This is the society that Imam Ali is in. Now, a person like Abu Dhar is regarded as a sinner. He's regarded as wrong. This is the society of Imam Ali. Now let's come a little bit forward, a little bit ahead, to see what happened in Imam Hussein's time, what was different in his time. Imam Ali says that, in my society, in my time, a person who's Mohsin and does good is regarded as a sinner. In the time of Imam Hussein, now the person who does good is not just regarded as a sinner, he's regarded as a criminal. See the decline. See how far the society is going down. Now this person, if you do good in the time of Hussein, now you are a criminal that you have to be executed and killed. This is the society of Imam Hussein. Now if someone wants to say the truth, they will be imprisoned and tortured and executed. At least in the time of Imam Ali, it was better. At least they were regarded as sinners. Allah will take care of them, they're sinful. No, a crime is different than a sin. If you do a sin, that's between you and Allah. If you do a crime, now Allah says a crime has to be punished in this dunya also. You're a criminal now. Mujrim. That's what you become. This was Imam Hussein's time. He says that zalim are increasing in their zulm in the time of Imam Ali. Zalim are increasing in their zulm. See, my friends, it doesn't mean that the people who were in the time of the Prophet, all of them were adil. No, they were zalim there also. But the zulm of the zalim, there was no opportunity for them to express it. The society was such that Rasulullah commanded that they did not have the choice, they did not have the means or the choice to express their zulm, do wrong. In the time of Imam Ali, he's saying it's increasing. Now they're doing zulm. Now they're speaking out against their leader. In the time of the Prophet, who dared to speak out against the Prophet? They regarded it as a sin. You can't do that. He's the Prophet. He's the leader. He was muhtaram. He was respected. So no one spoke out against him. But when we come to Imam Ali's time, look what happened. Now people are not only speaking out, they're coming out to fight him. They're coming out to fight Imam Ali. They're coming out and arguing against him. Imam Ali, he's saying something. They're saying, no, we don't believe in that. We will do this. Imam Ali is saying, okay, I will appoint him as the arbitrator. He said, no, we don't want him. We want someone else. He's your leader. Listen to him. You see, my friend, see where it's going. The zalim, they are improving in their zone. They're increasing in their zone. And it happens, my friends, when a society is in decline, that is what happens. People start to speak out against the truth. And now this is in the time of Imam Ali. When that zulm reached Imam Hussein, it came to the extent that now zalim and zulm were at its height, that now wherever truth is, they will run after it and kill it. This is how much a leader like Hussein, who the Prophet said he's the imam of the ummah, he had said, everyone knows it, and now the imam is in front of the people and making a stand, and everyone wants to come and kill him. This is the height of zulm. Then he says, "La nantafeo bima alimna." He says that the ilm, that what we learn, does not benefit us. You see, Now, this is what I go back to the first speech that I gave. The problem with the Muslims was not that they have knowledge. No, they had knowledge. They have knowledge, but the knowledge that they have doesn't bear fruits. We have a lot of knowledge. We know so many things. We heard so many speeches. How many ulama we heard? How many books we have read? So many things we know. But you see, the issue is not that we don't know it. We know it. But that knowledge that we have is not benefiting us. It's not that we don't know it. We don't believe in it. We haven't accepted it yet. So that knowledge is not giving us the fruits. This is Imam Ali's time. When we have knowledge, we see, we know we are going to die. We know there's hereafter. We know there's Allah. But still, we're not able to concentrate in prayers. We're not able to concentrate when we go in front of Allah, because we know Allah, but we don't believe in Him yet. We haven't accepted it yet. We haven't accepted it yet. This is our problem. You see, we are in that situation. In this situation, that we haven't accepted this knowledge yet. My friends, Imam Ali is saying, this is my time. People know everything. Yes, mashallah. They're ready to argue with me. I am Babul Madinatul Ilm, and they're ready to argue with me. Imam Ali is saying that, listen, I know about the heavens more than the earth, and they are ready to tell me what's right and wrong. Yes. This is when a society becomes such that now knowledge is not helpful for them anymore. You have knowledge, but you don't believe in it, my friends. وَلَا نَسْأَلُ أَمَّا جَهَلْنَا And we don't ask about what we are ignorant of. We don't know it, we don't ask about it. Two reasons for this. Either an individual, you will see some individuals are such that, you know what, they don't want to know, because it goes against their character, their personality. They just don't want to know. You can try to bring them to a majlis and insist and do everything, but you will see that it will be so hard for them to come and sit and learn. No. It's just that they don't want it. I mean, come on, these, you know, backward people. You'll see that. What kind of backward people are they, you know? Look at the world. Where is the world going? We have gone to the moon. And these people are talking about, you know, what happened 1400 years ago. Yes, we're on the moon right now. Right? And they are proud of that we are on the moon, and these people are backwards, that they don't know, you know, they're speaking about things that happened 1400 years ago. Come on, you know, please. It's a headache. You know. And I remember Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi in one of his books had said, Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi, he's one of the great ulama of our time. He's written a book, and in his book he had said, you know, in a reply to such things, right? He had said that, you know, men have advanced so much that they have gone to the moon. They have flown to the moon, but they haven't yet learned how to walk on the earth yet. Gone to the moon, but you don't know how to behave on the earth yet. Right, and you are proud of the fact that you have gone to the moon. You can't live with each other. You don't know how to behave with each other. You have no respect for the rights of each other. And you are proud of the fact that you have gone to the moon. What's the use of this type of advancement? What's the use of this type of advancement, my friends? The reason we learned what happened 1400 years ago is so that we can become insan and fulfill our perfection. That's why we are learning this, so that we can learn how to behave with one another, how to live our life as human beings. That's what we want to. That is our greatness. Not building computers. That's not our greatness. Our greatness is in the fact that we become human beings. That is our greatness. Salawat ala Muhammad. Now another reason, and you see another attitude of this, that it says that they don't inquire about what they don't know, or they're ignorant of. You'll see is that, you see, my friends, when a person is ignorant, the way of the Prophet and the way he taught us is that when you don't know, you go to people who know and learn from them. When you don't know, I'm ignorant. So you go to the people, you learn from them. And hence, a society that is Islamic, you see, wants to know from the source of the knowledge. They will go and learn. But when a society declines, now they don't want to go to the source. Why? Because now they feel that their opinion is knowledge. When I feel that, you know what, this is what I think. Now what I think is knowledge for me. What do you think is knowledge for you? When we start to think that our opinion is knowledge, then you know that we are in a state of decline. Because when we don't know, we should be looking at, okay, let's see who knows. Allah knows, let's go and see what Allah says. Rasulullah knows, let's go and see what he says. Imam knows, let's go and see what he says. Instead of that, when we have our opinion, we make our opinion and we say, no, this is what I think is right. And now, when we know and when we hear what Allah says or Rasul says, we say, well, no, I don't agree with that because my opinion is this. This is the state of a society that Imam Ali is describing. When our opinion become equal to Allah's opinion. You know, and if the Imam, he comes today and says, this is what it is, so obviously the way we are trained, we will tell him, you have a right to your opinion. You're entitled to an opinion, okay, you know. I won't oppose you on that, but I don't agree with it. My friends, this is a situation. When Rasulullah was there, you see that whatever he said became the opinion of the people. Allah himself says, وَمَا كَانَ لِمُؤْمِنٍ وَلَا مُؤْمِنَةٍ إِذَا قَضَ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولَهُ أَمْرًا أَن يَكُونَ لَهُمُ الْخِيَرَةِ. When Allah and His Messenger decide on something, when Allah and His Messenger decide on something, then the mu'min, man or woman, they have no choice but to accept what Rasulullah had said, because to them this is knowledge. If their opinion is different than that, then they will submit to what Allah says, not ask Allah to submit to what they think. The practice of Islam is what? The whole idea of Islam is submit to Allah's will. If Allah's will is different than ours, if Allah's opinion is different than ours, our job as a Muslim is to ignore our opinion and submit to Allah's opinion. That is the idea of Islam. That's why we are Muslims. That's why we are called Muslims. If we say that no, we will not submit to what Allah says, then what is this? Islam or غير الإسلام? Different, my friends. Understand this. This is the society of Imam Ali. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Please pay attention to this announcement. It's very serious. There's a car, gray Acura, number plate 944ZPR. It's blocking the exit, so please, if you can take the time to, move it out of the way. Thank you. Salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Imam Ali is describing his society. And we want to see from there where it goes. He says, وَلَا نَتَخَوَّفُ قَارِئَةً حَتَّى تَحِلُّ بِنَا. And my society is such that it is not afraid. It is not afraid of a calamity until the calamity falls on its head. What happens, my friend? You see, there are different attitudes, you see, in a society, and you'll see this. And I want you to reflect on our own society that we live in. What kind of people are we? If we hear of a calamity coming, do we get ready for it, prepare for it? Or are we people who ignore it until it falls on our head? What kind of a person am I? For example, you know, I don't know what kind of natural disasters you have here. You know, rainfall, mudslides. You know, we have hurricanes in Florida. So when you know that this is a hurricane prone area, you know that the hurricane is going to come. Right? Now it might come, it might not come. We don't know for sure. But wisdom says, hey, you know what? Let's get ready for it. At least have the things necessary in the house that if it comes, then we are prepared for it. If a hurricane happens, we know where is the shelter in the local area. Okay, this is the shelter here. If a hurricane comes, I'll take my wife and kids and go over there. Or, for example, I have a radio that runs on batteries, a transistor radio, whatever. Whatever is necessary to prepare yourself from the calamity, you get ready for it. Now, a hurricane, it's not necessary it's going to come or not. Really, I mean, we don't know if it's going to come or not. But it might come. There is a chance of it coming. Just a chance. My friends, when we look at these natural disasters, you see, even their people, even though there's a chance, people get ready for it. They prepare for it if they're wise. Now, when you look at our life, the calamities that are going to come on us, that we know are coming without any doubt, how much are we preparing for those calamities? Death is coming to us. Our mouth, kullu nafsin dha'iqatul maut, we all are going to die. It's coming. We know it's coming. It's not even a maybe. It's a certainty. Yes, it is. For sure. How much are we preparing for it? How much are we getting ready? Have we got the things together to get ready? What kind of a people are we? No, you see, many people are like such that they ignore it. They don't want to know about it until it hits them on their head. When death comes in front of them, now they're like, oh my God, death's here. And there are some people who think that they're brave. I'm not afraid of death. I'm not afraid. I'm a daredevil. No, the reason is because they don't believe it's coming. I mean, the knowledge is there, but they don't believe it's coming. When they're daredevils, what happens? When death comes, these are the people who died with their eyes wide open. Because they couldn't believe it happened. Oh my goodness, what happened? This is, my friends, this is what we when ye have the time, get ready for it. When the calamity is coming. Imam Ali is seeing the calamity coming. And he's warning the people, you are not afraid of the calamity coming. You will be afraid of it when it hits you. That trial that's coming, that calamity that's coming, for sure it's coming because you're heading that way. That calamity for those people in Imam Ali's time was Karbala. When Karbala came and hit them on their head, then they woke up and said, what happened? Then they were like, what happened? They woke up. My friends, this is a society that's on a decline. And after explaining this, now Imam Ali describes the people in the society. And he says that there are four types of people. Let me go through the beginning of that, inshallah, today, and we'll do the rest, inshallah, as we go on and learn the things we can learn in order to prevent another Karbala from happening. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. Imam says that there are four types of people in a society. In the society that he's living in, there are four types of people. Very interesting. Very interesting division he made. You know, and it's something that really, you know, like, if you learn it, you know, truly, you know, we can start reflecting on it and trying to analyze our own society, my friends. These are tidbits for us so that it can help us to understand how to analyze society and people. And analyze our own self. He says that there are four types of people. Who are these people? Now I'm going to explain the first two types today. He says, منهم من لا يمنعه الفساد في الأرض إلا مهانة نفسه وكلالة حده منضيد وفره. He says that the first type of people, really pay attention to this, very interesting. He says the first type amongst the people are those people who the only reason, they're mufsid, they are tyrants, they're oppressive, they're zalim. But the only reason they don't do zulm, the only reason they are not tyrants or they don't oppress others is because they don't have the money or the means to do it. Yeah, they're tyrants. Average people, they're tyrants. They're zalim. But the reason they cannot do zulm on others is because they are too low, no one listens to them, or they don't have the money or the influence to do the zulm. That's it. You'll see these people, average people, a taxi driver, a store owner, a doctor, engineer, living his life. He's a tyrant. But the only reason he cannot do something and do zulm on others, the only reason that he cannot become Yazid, that he is not Yazid, or he is Yazid, but he cannot do what Yazid has done, is because his father is not Muawiyah. If his father was Muawiyah, then he would be a Yazid also. But because he was born to a low income family, who didn't have the means to do zulm on others, that's why he is not able to do the zulm. He cannot hurt others. He cannot harm others. He can't do anything to them because he is a low life. But you see, when this person hasn't killed anyone yet, he hasn't done he hasn't spilled any blood yet. But when this person dies and will be raised, he will be raised next to Yazid. Here's Yazid, here's he. And he'll be looking at, saying, wait a minute, there's a mistake, you know. I'm in the same room with Yazid. Wait a minute. How can you put me in the same room with Yazid? I can't be in this room. No, you're in the same room there. In the pit of hell. Go there. But wait a minute. I can't be that. I haven't shed any blood. He says, no, you were a tyrant. Killing others is not the condition. That character is the condition. You had the character of a tyrant. The only reason that you couldn't do it is because you didn't have the means to do it. You don't have the money to do it. You know, there are some people who want to do evil. The only reason they can't is because they have no money. Really, you know, I mean, you see some people, it's just because they don't have money they can't do evil. If you give them some money, you'll find them in Las Vegas the next day. Where do you go? You went on a vacation of sin. Look at those people. That's what they do. This is their nadi. They will be raised with Yazid, and you will be like, and they'll be looking at the angel and say, wait a minute, man, there's a mistake here. We thought mistakes only happen in jails on earth. You put us with Yazid. No, you are with Yazid because you are also a zalim. Zalim belong with each other. You don't have to kill 200,000 people. No, you're with him because your character is that. My friends, this is first group of people Imam Ali is describing. Now, inshallah, again, just to give you from the other side also. So, you have some hope also, not just fear. So I'll give you, you know, an example from the other side so you understand this also. Send me a salawat. I said, my friends, there's a normal person. He's working at his job. But when you look at his heart is clean. When you look at his iman, there is certainty. When you look at his behavior, it is honest and truthful. A normal person, No one cares about him. Comes to the majlis and goes. No one really cares about him. You know, he has no money, he has no influence, nothing. He just comes and goes. This person, who's not known for being great and this and that. Really, sometimes what happens is that people who are good, their goodness is not known because they never had the chance to show their goodness. They never had the chance or the opportunity to show their goodness. And this person who is there, when he will be raised, he will be raised next to Malik Ashtar. Hey Allah, what did I do? I mean, what did he do to be next to Malik Ashtar? He said he had the character of Malik Ashtar. He just didn't have the battlefield to show his character. Sometimes the character of good is there, but the opportunity is not there to show goodness. That's why in a society where zulm is prevailing, goodness cannot be known. They don't have the opportunity to show that. Otherwise, if they had the battleground, they would do the same that Malik Ashtar and those companions of Imam Ali and other Imams have done. And Allah will raise them together also. Friends, understand that. If we had the opportunity, if Karbala was, who knows how many of us would be there in Karbala with Imam Hussein playing the role of Habib ibn Mazahir or Muslim ibn Osaja or Zuhair ibn Kain. So Allah is not going to let go of our good character and the work that we have done go to waste. He says, no. You have done good, you have kept your character. It's just that Hussein, you did not live in the time of Hussein. Otherwise, you would be there with him. But in the hereafter, he'll put you together. This, my friend, understand this. This is something that we need to understand, what it means. But on the other hand also, if you are a zalim, if your character is zalim, then you are going to go and stand up with Yazid. This is the way it is. This group of people, who are these people? They are low lives. These are low lives. These are the people you see Imam Hussein had faced in Karbala. You know, people who did not have the means or who went from good families or tribes. No, the low lives of society. These were the people Imam Hussein faced. The second group. He says, Minhum al-muslatu lisayfihi. وَالْمُؤْلِنُ بِشَرِّهِ وَمُجْلِبُ بِخَيْلِهِ وَرَجْلِهِ He says that the second group of people are those people who have come out openly, who have drawn their swords, you know, and they have let known their position of evil, and they have come out on feet and on horses to fight against the Imam of their time. Fight against the truth. Meaning these are the people who are courageous, who are the special people in a society. The individuals who are the high-ranking officials or officers of the society. Two groups, Imam says. I'll just say one thing, inshallah, and we'll explain more, inshallah, tomorrow. But here, my friends, just in that, two groups of people that Imam has mentioned in the first two things. Let me just explain to you in my own words, so that you understand it better. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. My friends, in any society, you'll see that there are two groups of people. You know, people are divided in different ways. You know, for example, in height, right, you'll see that you'll say some people are tall, some people are short. In weight, you'll say some people are thin, some people are fat. Right? In different ways, you divide people. When it comes to influence on others, people are divided into two types. There are those people who are influenced by others, and there are those people who influence others. You'll see that there are people who are influenced by other people, and then there are those people who are not influenced by others, but they influence others. There are two groups of people in any society, you'll see this. In this group in Zainab organization, you will see, if you put them together, you will see that. At the end, you will see that there will be some people who will be asking, so what should we do? And there'll be some people saying, okay, you know, we need to do this. It's natural. There are people who are influenced by others, and there are people who influence others. Right? Those who are influenced by others, we will call them followers. Those who influence others, we will call them leaders. I mean, they have the ability to administrate other people, to manage other people. They're always in a society leaders who can manage other people, organize people together and make them work. And there are those people who are not leaders, they're followers. You ask them to do something, they'll do it. If you give them a responsibility that, okay, you're in charge of this, they won't know where to start. They will be completely lost, like a wide-eyed deer, like a deer in front of headlights. I don't know what to do. You know, what's this? They won't know what to do with it. Responsibility, my friends. So what happens is that leaders are people who are able to organize others. They're able to organize others. Whether they're good or bad, that doesn't matter. Batil also has leaders. Haq also has leaders. Leaders can be anywhere. People who can administrate, who can manage other people. They could be anywhere, and they could be good also. They can efficiently make other people work. These are leaders in a society. And then you have the people who are the followers in the society. When you look at these two groups, you see that leaders are necessary in order to make the people work correctly. If you don't have leaders, then really everyone is like chicken running around with no heads. Right? They don't know what to do. My friends, in the time of the Prophet, Batil had leaders. I mean, no matter what you say, Abu Jahl was a leader. Abu Sufyan was a leader of Batil. They had leaders who could organize people. Imam Ali faced leaders. He faced Muawiyah, who was able to manage people, administrate people. He was able to lead the people. Even though Batil, that doesn't matter. But when we come to Karbala, you see that the one thing Karbala was lacking is that in Karbala, the second group was not there, that which is called leaders. No one was a leader there. All of these were second-rate foot soldiers who were given the responsibility of killing Imam Hussein. No one was a leader there. I mean, they didn't know what they were doing there. In Karbala, all these people were sent over there. No one knew what he was doing. Umar ibn Sa'd was put in charge. Every time an issue came to him, he didn't know what to do. Imam Hussein asked for one night. He says, give me one night to worship. One night for ibadat. All these heads got together. However small they were, they all got together and said, okay, you know, scratching their heads, what should we do? What should we do? Asking each other. They had a meeting. They had a meeting asking each other, what should we do now? Should we give it to him? Not give it to him? They had no clue what was going on. What they're going to do. Just waiting for commands to come so they can follow it. The people in Karbala were all followers. No one was a manager. No one was an administrator. No one was a leader there. They were all followers who were in Karbala. Now at the meeting and say, okay, you know this. And so at the end they decided, you know what? No. Don't give Hussein the chance. No more night. Let's do the battle right now. They decided that. And then someone came to them and says, idiots, come on, what's going on with you all? He wants to pray, let him pray. It's one night for us here. Fine, let him pray. And they're like, okay. They changed their decision right away. My friends, these were followers who were in Karbala. The people in Karbala were followers. People there, there was no one who was able to manage, no one who was able to give direction, nothing. They were just a large group of followers who were sent for a slaughter. That's what they were. This is what I want you to understand, my friend. What is Karbala? Understand it in depth. So you see, who did Imam Hussein fight? Who were these people who faced Imam Hussein? No one was there to lead those people. Umar ibn Sa'd also, when he shot the first arrow, what did he say? He said, be witness in front of Yazid, I am the one who shot the first arrow. He's a follower. He just wants to please his master. You know what slave mentality is, my friends? Understand what slave mentality is. Slave mentality, when you are a slave, then you always want to please your master. In fact, you will do more than what the master asks you to do so that you make sure that you please him. You know, for example, you know, like if you ever had a servant in your house, you'll know what I mean. Right? If you have an employee, you'll know what I mean. Yes, a maid servant in the house, you know. In the Muslim world, Pakistan, India, they have no current servants, right? And you'll see that they want to do more than what you ask them to do so that they want to please you. You know, that you will give them some inam and some reward. This and that. They want to do more than that. This is a slave mentality. That you're not doing what you're asked to do, but you do more than what you're asked to do so that you can please your master. More than what they asked you. If they asked you, listen, bring me this, you will bring it with something else. Here, I brought you this also. You ask them for chai, they'll give you your cookies. Here, cookies also. I didn't ask for cookies. No, this is for you. Right? To please you. They do more than that. What you ask them to do. These are slaves. The people in Karbala were slaves. They were followers. They were slaves. They wanted to please the master. Yazid asked them for the head of Hussein. They got them the head of the children of Hussein also. Yes. Yazid said, either get Bayat or get the head of Hussein. That's it. He didn't tell them to, you know, slaughter Ali Asghar and slaughter his head and bring his head. No, but because they were followers and slaves, they wanted to please their master. You see, my friends, if there was a leader there, he would say, no, this is where we draw the line. That's it. That's all we need. Let's go back home. But no, because they were followers, they didn't know where to stop. They didn't know where to stop. They came there, they went all out in order to make sure that they will do everything they can to butcher the family of Imam Hussein. Really, my friends, Karbala was a strange battle. What a battle was Karbala. Really, look at this battlefield. Look at this battlefield. What kind of a battle was this? All of these, they came to Karbala in hordes and hordes and thousands, they came there. To do what? So they can have a killing in Karbala. Truly, they can have a killing in Karbala. This is how they came out. They came there. And when they came there, you see how it came about. What happened there? Truly, look at, you know, when the companions of Imam Hussein died and were killed, now only the family of Hussein was remaining. Only now the family of Imam. His children, his cousins, his nephews, that's all it was remaining. Really. When Ali Akbar went out, who was the first one to go from Ahlul Bayt. When Ali Akbar went out, truly, you know, when he was struck in the chest with a spear. When he was struck in the chest with a spear, the spear went from his back, it came out from the front. Ali Akbar, and then the person who thrust the spear in there, he broke the spear. Ali Akbar, in that shock, fell unconscious. He fell on his horse. When he fell on the horse went to the camp of Yazid's army. And when they saw Ali Akbar, let alone that he is the Shabi of Rasulullah, I mean the picture of Rasulullah, let alone that when he came to the camp, he was unconscious. These people hoarded on him like wolves and started cutting him up into pieces in the back. It is said that so many strikes he were put in his back, so many swords struck his back that there was no place for a wound. This is how these people fought, my friends. This is how these people fought. When Ali Akbar's body came back to the camp of Imam Hussein, when the youth looked at it, the youth didn't know what to do. Everyone was just inching to go towards the battlefield. Ali Akbar was the first blow to Ahlul Bayt, and the first blow was a very heavy blow for Ahlul Bayt. Ali Akbar was gone. When Ali Akbar was gone, now everyone didn't know what to do. Ali Akbar, when they saw his body, everyone was enraged with madness. Oh, they have taken Ali Akbar. Friends, if you look at the tragedies of Karbala, the zulm that's done in Karbala, really Karbala is a battle to just think about. Really, go and reflect on it to see what happened in Karbala. Really, what happened in Karbala, truly, when you see this. Some masaib are there, you know, that we don't understand. It requires us to think for a long time in order to for us to understand these masaib. These musibat of Imam Hussein, some of them are easy to understand. Ali Asghar being killed, for everyone is easy to understand. Infanticide is wrong. Killing a baby is wrong, so we understand that and we cry for it. You know, when we see that Ali Akbar was killed in a way like this, we can understand that this is wrong. How can you do this? Sometimes we don't understand these things. Some musibat are there. It's really hard for us to understand because we are not in that position to understand. Really, we don't know. Imam Hussein, let me just tell you one of those times of Imam Hussein, and then you can understand what Imam Hussein went through. What was his musibah that we don't even understand? How to cry? That's why we don't cry on that musibah that much, because we can't relate to it. But I'll just tell you something so that you can just understand from that. You know, when Imam Hussein was on his way to Karbala, and he heard of the shahadat of Muslim ibn Aqil. He heard about the shahadat of Muslim ibn Aqil. He was standing up, he sat down, he could not take it. He sat down, and you know what he said? He says, in the hayati ba'dakal afa, he says, after you, O Muslim ibn Aqil, I cannot go on living anymore, my life is worthless. Ibn Aqil, after you, my life is worthless, I can't live anymore. Hussein, Muslim ibn Aqil is your cousin. You haven't even seen his death. You haven't picked up his body. You haven't smelled his blood. You haven't touched his injuries. Hussein, you are saying this about Ibn Aqil? You know the statement of Hussein. You see, do not think that Imam Hussein is a poet and he says things to make things sensationalized. It's not that. When he speaks the truth and the reality. When he's saying, Ibn Aqil, after you, my life is worthless. Imagine the pain Hussein went through. You see, there's only one other time he has used this statement. Only one other time he has used this statement, and that was when he saw the body of Ali Akbar. He says, Ibni, in the hayati ba'dakal jafa, after you, life is not worth living anymore. In other words, the pain of Muslim ibn Aqil that Hussein faced was the same pain that he faced when he saw Ali Akbar's body. Can you imagine that? Oh, it's hard for us. You know why? Because you don't know what it means to lose your representative. You don't know what it means. You're not a leader. Only the Imam can understand the loss of it. can know that. Since we can't relate with it, that's why it's hard for us to comprehend. But this is Hussein's musibat that only Hussein faced, and no one is able to share this with him. Really, my friends, these are the musibat of Karbala that we don't understand. How many of them are there that Hussein faced and he cried for, and no one is able to cry for it because only Hussein can feel that pain. Really, only Hussein can feel that pain. That's why when you see, for example, truly, this is where you see, because we don't have representatives, we are not leaders, we don't have Numainde representatives. That's why when you see the rahbar cry for a representative, now you know that Hussein had felt when Ibn Aqil had died. He knows what it is, my friends. He knows the pain, he can feel that pain. Only a few can cry with Hussein on this musibat. Truly, my friends, this is something that we need to understand what Karbala is. What kind of a war was Karbala? What was the battlefield of Karbala? Hussein is lying on the ground. Hussein is lying on the ground. Who's coming out to defend him? No one is coming there to defend him. This is the grandson of Rasulullah. He's lying on the ground. No one is coming there to defend him. And you know what? A boy by the name of Abdullah came out. Whose son was this? It is not known. Maybe Hazrat Abbas's son. He came out there. He saw his uncle there. All his cousins have died. Qasim and Auna Muhammad, all of them had died. He was only 5 years old. He came running out. Running out, and he came to Hussein and said, "Uncle, I'm here to defend you. I'm here to defend you. Really, I'm here to defend you." He saw the cuts on Imam Hussein's body. You know how many cuts were there? There were 34 cuts from swords, 33 gashes from spears, and there were innumerable arrows that were embedded in his body. When this child, you know, when this child came out, he said, "Uncle, I'm here to help you. Let me help you, uncle." He looked at the wounds, wanted to do something. And you know, he said, "Uncle, I know my mother has taught me how to mend wounds. You know, you put, whenever there's a cut, you put your hands on both sides of the cut and you push it in so that it heals itself, so that it can come together." And he tried doing that. But as he did that, he realized something. He said, "Uncle, what can I do?" He didn't understand that it can only work when there's one cut. But when there are more than one cut, every time you pull one together, the other opens up. The other opens up. He tries to push one together and the other opens up. He said, "Uncle, I can't put these together. I can't put these together, uncle. What can I do? I'm trying, uncle. I can't put these together." Hussein was so overcome with emotions. He took that child and he brought him to himself. The people came. They wanted to attack Hussein. And the child lay on top of Hussein and said, "I will not let you hurt my uncle. I will not let you hurt my uncle." And then he said, they asked him to get, they tried to pull him, but Hussein pulled him, pulled the child close to him so they don't take him. So they came and said, "Hit Hussein with the child in him." They came and started to hit Hussein, and when they hit the Hussein, the child raised his hands to defend Hussein. The sword came and cut the hand of the child. It cut the hand of the child in such a way that the hand was cut and not cut, meaning the bone was cut but it was hanging on its skin. It was hanging on his skin. The child started to cry and said, "Ammo, my uncle." Hussein, all he could do is cry for the child. The child let go of the child. The child went back running and said, "Mother, see what I've done for my uncle Hussein. See what I've done for my uncle." Ayya munqalibin.